Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to continue our Expectations series today. Talking about two important Ravens today, Michael Pierce and Patrick McCary. And joining us for that is Sean Asher. Sean, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ken. I just got back from a trip to Maryland. I took my son, who is 15 months old, to his first O's game. And now I get to talk Baltimore Ravens with you, buddy. So that's a fantastic week.
Which game did your son going to take this rich memory from his?
He won't remember anything. He did pick out a baseball, though. He was like throwing a temper tantrum, as toddlers do. And we were walking just to get him to walk, and he saw the team store and a bucket of balls, and he just sprinted for it. And I was like, oh, I'm getting my son his first baseball today. But it was the second game against Atlanta, so it was a good one.
We went to that as well, the Povich game. So outstanding. Great game to see. All right. Well, let's talk about Michael Pierce and Patrick McCary. I think, you know, it's interesting. It's not a clear undercard on this one. Who do you want to talk about first?
Oh, man. Probably Pierce, right? Because I feel like we're going to, you know, you'll be able to keep us on track with Pat McCary with your knowledge of the offensive line. And if we run over with Pierce, we can shorten it back up with McCary there.
All right. I'm not going to be a Nazi like that. We're very loose with time standards on this thing. Pierce entering his ninth season. He was extended through 2025 in December. Conserved some void money that was on his deal. They went through this weird thing where they previously had shortened the contract and added void years, but then he had a breakout year again and playing the most snaps he has. We'll get into that. And they decided, well, let's resign him and add years to that. And of course, they conserved a little bit of that void money in the process, which was nice. Michael Pierce now 32 in November. What are your thoughts coming out of that great 2023 season?
Man, the biggest thing, quarterback hurries, 27, career high in 2023. And, you know, like, I don't know. I'm in love with the dudes that do the dirty work and the dudes that set up other dudes to make plays. So, like, you know, maybe that's why I'm like, why isn't Michael Pierce an all-pro? But he's not an all-pro. He's just not, you know. But he flashes like it at times. But, yeah, 27 hurries. And then, you know, that shortening of the contract, and then, you know, oh no, we want to add a breakout. Was it a breakout, or were we just like, we were healthy and consistent, you know? And like, that's the big thing for Michael Pierce, right?
It certainly has been. In the previous 3 years, he played only 342 snaps. That includes penalties in 11 games over three seasons. And that included a COVID year that he sat out in 2020, yep. And then 21-22, one with Minnesota, one with Baltimore. But played 698 snaps, including the playoffs, in this year. So more than doubled the total for the previous three seasons. It's really sad what happened to him in 22, because he was playing some great football through those first 3 weeks before he got hurt at New England. And then he came back, and honestly, he basically duplicated that for an entire season. So the last, you know, full season plus three games that Michael Pierce has played, he's been at a very high level.
Yep. And I think that was a biceps week three, wasn't it? And that's a tough one, you know, for a dude in the trenches that's doing the dirty work, especially at that later in his career. Like, that's a tough injury. So, yeah, I mean, it was great to see him back. healthy all year, and then, you know, the doing what he does best. And, you know, there's a couple games in there. I can't remember which one in specific. I'd have to go back and look, but there was one game he popped, like he really popped off.
He had a number of games where he's great. Two fourth down stops at Arizona was
that was huge. Arizona. That was the one. Yep. That was the one I was thinking of.
So, but I think, you know, the biggest thing I'm going to say is at a general level, and it's often hard to come up with the great plays that defensive linemen make when they don't pick up really highlight real sacks very often. But this team had just lost Calais Campbell coming into this year, and they ended up playing 2.20 defensive line snaps per play. They had five guys who took all the defensive line snaps. Do a little math. 2.20 divided by five is 0.44. That means the average player had to play 44% of the snaps among those linemen to fill that up. That's a lot for the Ravens. That is a high percentage. And Michael Pierce was well north of that because the Ravens couldn't figure out where they could do without him. So Pierce last year during the entire season played 55.3% of the snaps.
Which is wild. Absolutely wild. You know, and it's the dude's a big dude. Like, you know, we think of defensive linemen, interior defensive linemen. We always think they're big dudes, but Michael Pierce is a monster of a human being. You know, and it's very easy to figure out which one he is, even if you don't know numbers and you're just a casual listener, because it's the dude with the jersey that's like half up, because it doesn't, you know, it's just kind of hard to keep it down the entire game. But, and for a dude that size, his motor is just unreal. You know, it's impressive to see. So yeah, one of my favorite players on the team right now to talk about.
He's very fun to watch. Does a great job with pad level. He's a little bit shorter anyway for a defensive lineman, and relative to offensive lineman, he's going to typically be the shorter man. But he's a great job of getting under pads. And when Michael Pierce gets under your arms or under your pads, you're in a hell of a lot of trouble as an offensive lineman, because he will bull rush you right back to his heart's content. And I love that about his game. I love all the setup pressures he had. You alluded to a large pressure number. I assume that's what you got from PFF, but he had a lot of first pressures that helped set up Matabike, who was his running mate for most of the season, and Clowney and Van Noy and others for sacks. It's just his initial pressures were a very big factor in the Ravens, history or record setting sack total.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, a big credit to, like, he's getting double teamed, you know, like you can't not double team the guy when you're working with somebody that's that big, that's that strong, and has that. It's not the initial burst, but like the head of steam, you know, if he starts moving you backwards, you're not going to anchor very well against him. It's really hard. I mean, it's momentum. It's physics, right? Like Michael Pierce is a physics problem on the football field.
That's good. I like that. He played a lot more pass snaps this year than he has in the past. Now, some of it was a factor of the Ravens were getting passed on a lot because they had the lead on other teams. Other teams had to try and come back. But he played 453 pass snaps and 245 run snaps. Probably one of the coolest things about his season was dropping to coverage on some plays, and he had 18 times he dropped a coverage. If you think that's a lot for a nose tackle, and it is, don't get me wrong, it's a lot for a nose tackle, but Adam Butler, who played nose tackle for the Dolphins in the 2021 game the Ravens lost at Miami when they had all those cover zero blitzes, he dropped a coverage 18 times in that game alone.
Wow.
It can happen.
And I mean, the last defensive lineman that we would use in coverage snaps like that was Helody, right? Like I can't think of another one that off the top of my head that pops.
It's a kind of a scheme thing. So they've done it a fair amount with other players over the years. They've dropped him to coverage, but and Nada was a guy who sometimes dropped to cover. Kelly Gregg sometimes dropped to cover, but it's yet Kelly Gregg dropped to cover and got an interception in the game where he won his job against the Giants in the 2001 preseason. He was up in that tight battle with Dwayne Missouri to win the last spot on the roster, if you remember from Hard Knocks.
And Dwayne Missouri,
Absolutely.
Wow. Flashback, man. Flashback.
Now, one thing I was kind of hoping we'd see is some 1-3 out of the combination of Pierce and Travis Jones. And we didn't really end up seeing that much because Matabike had such an extreme share of snaps. I thought actually it'd make a lot of sense on early downs. You get Jones in there some at the three. Jones turned out to be the guy they would go to as Matabike's running mate as the season went on in passing down situations. They actually transitioned from Pierce to Jones, but still a great year for Pierce in that. And I was kind of hoping it would be kind of a return to Pierce's roots to do that 1-3 trick, because Pierce, when he came to the Ravens originally, took over the nose tackle role, and they moved Brandon Williams to a 3-tech on a lot of snaps to deal with that. And I think whoever plays 3-tech for the Baltimore Ravens, when Michael Pierce is a nose, has a big advantage. I think you kind of alluded to that earlier.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, to go back to the Hamilton episode, the Stevens episode, like you've touched on this topic a couple different times now in this series about, you know, giving young players limited roles and how much you ask them to do. And especially, I think Jones, he had a hyperextended ACL or MCL, something, hyperextended knee during training camp. And, you know, I was thinking the same lines that Pearson Jones is going to be an insane combo. Like, I'm not an expert analyst at all, but in my mock drafts the year before, like I was trying to get Jones in the second round in all of my mock drafts. Cause like I was like, this dude's insane. Obviously it's inferior competition, but anyway, I think the limited role in combination with the knee injury in training camp, I think that's kind of part of why we saw that we didn't see that combination as much as we would have, but we will touch on it and what I've got listed for a good season for Michael Pierce, because I think there's some interesting things that they could do to swap that up a little bit.
All right. Pierce continues to be one of the NFL's best run defenders, definitely a defensive win specialist on run plays, had 28 more stops in 2023. Those are tackles where the offense does not stay on schedule. Obviously, there's two Arizona plays alone. One of them was actually a batted pass. The other was a stop on 4th-and-1, a very typical Michael Pierce style to just stand someone straight up in the hole and drive him backwards. He had 5 missed tackles in 23, which was one of the odd things about the year, because he had a great year, certainly. But the 5 missed tackles are amazingly high for him. He's a lock-on grip strength player who'd had only 9 previous missed tackles his entire career and missed 5. They played a lot more snaps, so maybe there's some reason for it, but still the only maybe a little bit frustrating number from the season. It's obviously on a very small scale, so I'm not putting them down for it, but you know, a little unfortunate.
So I did see that stat as well at PFF, and when I was looking at that, I was going game by game. It seemed more like it was potentially a zone scheme versus a man scheme. You know, you get Pierce out running laterally, and he's trying to grab somebody, and like that's a little bit more. So I don't know that that's 100% of a part of it, but in my mind, I was like, that's probably contributing to some of that.
Yeah, anytime that you have a player who's playing 2 gaps – standing up, that's often also a way that it makes it more likely you get a missed tackle, because when you've got only one arm free, much harder to make that tackle. I think Brent Urban probably had a few missed tackles on that basis in this last year and in general during his career by trying to man 2 gaps and be a space eater like he's been most effective.
Of course, and that's never called holding unless it's our offense doing the blocking, right? As a true NFL fan, that's how that works.
There you go. I do think Pierce has always been a pretty good pass rusher, but again, this was a game where he just had a wonderful set of pocket compressions. He missed a couple sacks himself, I think, too. That might have contributed to his missed tackle total. But I think when he had missed tackles, they typically ended up being big plays by someone else. So it's been a very exciting thing to see him jump back onto the football field the way he does. Just an extraordinarily dominant player.
I know you don't like to contribute to the conspiracy theory fodder for the flock, but I feel like I have to. The new strength and conditioning coach, and Pierce is healthy the whole season. He has this breakout year. You know, I don't know. Just see what the fans tweet about it.
Well, that's interesting. I wonder if that's what they have behind that, or if there may also be other things. We talked to some people on the show. I don't know if you heard the show, but the people from Argentina who had the
heat mapping
of muscles, and it basically requires your football players to strip nude before and after practice and go through a room where they'll get checked. Normal like football equipment actually blocks some of the thing they're doing, but it allows you to see small injuries before they become large injuries, and hopefully put people on the shelf for a day or two before you have to put them on the shelf for 2 weeks. Yeah. So it's an interesting thing. They're using it in South American soccer a fair amount, where they are 100%, you know, looking for every competitive advantage.
Oh yeah, absolutely. If we talk about where the money is at, it's not in America's version of football. You know, we think it is, but you know, there's a lot more money in soccer than there is in American's version of football, for sure. Yeah.
Now, one thing about the Ravens is they really didn't go out to get a bunch of additional pass rush help this year. They did get Adisa Isaac, certainly a good pickup. They re-signed Kyle Van Noy. It was not a sure thing, but he's around. But they also lost Jadeveon Clowney. Do you think there's a pretty clear indication that the Ravens are happy with their 3-2 inside pass rush and probably play a little bit less rush nickel this year, meaning with three outside linebackers and taking an extra defensive tackle off the field?
I think it is a little bit more risky, right? Because you have a lot less, and I don't want to even say guaranteed, but like Jadeveon Clowney, we knew we were getting a player that was going to contribute. If he's healthy, he's going to contribute. We didn't know he was going to have that season, for sure not, but we knew he would raise the bar for what the floor was for the outside pass rush, right? We knew that what the floor was going to be higher. So it's a little bit more risky, but I don't know that I've heard anybody inside of Ravens organization say anything bad about Owe. You know, and as much as Twitter hates Odafe Owe, and you know, they don't care that the pressure rates that you know, it's just there's no sacks, and I get it, but there's nobody inside the Ravens organizations that has said anything other than glowing about like how much they believe in this dude. So you know, maybe I'm, susceptible to it, right? And I'm like, okay, these guys know more than me. I trust them, so I buy into what they're saying. But it's hard not to, you know? Like, it seems like ADC has a plan for a lot of the different things.
We've seen a number of Ravens outside linebackers go through a period where they put up high pressure rights. In Za'Darius Smith's case, he had a bunch of quarterback hits before he became a great pass rusher. And honestly, a lot of his great years as a pass rusher came after he left the Ravens, but he was still a great pressure guy when he was with Baltimore. And he's not the only one who falls into that category. Clowney and Van Noy happen to have cashed in on what they did in 2023 with the Ravens. And they got into a very good situation to start with. But anyway, I've got nothing but positive thoughts about Odafe Owe going into this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and then we also just signed two veteran interior defensive linemen a week or two ago, you know, some journeymen. I don't remember either of their names. And I know my brother texted me, he's like, what's this about? I'm like, I'm sure one of them's going to hang out on the practice squad the whole season because we only have this many defensive linemen. And if somebody gets hurt, we need a body that can eat up space.
So it should again, I would think, be five on the roster and one or more on the practice squad. One of the things that hasn't always worked out, one of the reasons why that hasn't always worked out for the Ravens is because all other teams in the National Football League know that the Ravens practice squad is the best place to find defensive alignment.
Yeah, of course. Yep.
All right, let's pull it back to Michael Pierce for a second. Let's talk about what makes up a good season for Michael Pierce.
All right, good season. Only misses four games. Just throwing that out there. And I, you know, injuries happen, and I get it. And for Pierce to have a good season, both statistically and something that is impactful for the team, four, maybe six, if it's something, you know, he has like an ankle that's tweaked for two games, and then he's got something else that lasts four games. But the other piece of that injury puzzle is he can't end the season on IR. Because if this team wants to be successful, we need Michael Pierce in cold weather football.
All right. Love it. Anything else to say about it than that? Or is that pretty much it?
Yeah. So back to the Pierce and Jones conversation. I think for Pierce to have a good season, we need to see Pierce less on first down.
Okay.
We need to see more of Pierce fresh and healthy on third downs, rushing the passer with Matabike more in third down situations. So I'd like to see a slight regression in snaps for Pierce to have a good year just because he is getting older. And, you know, with age comes decline. It's inevitable. It's father time. So I think for a good year, we need to see a slight decrease in total snaps, and we need to see more of those snaps on the later downs.
Okay. I almost completely agree with you. I'll just read off my good season because of that. Plays 13 plus games. That's what you had. Remains a plus plus run defender. Very important. Got to be two pluses, if not three pluses, as a run defender. Yep. He's one of the best in the league. The Ravens continue to derive value from him as a pass rusher, although it does not show up in his sack total. Basically, if he does anything close to what he did last year, that's going to get it done. Lots of interior pressure, force compression, quarterback pulls the ball down, runs into the arms of whatever outside linebacker they like to, or Matabike. All of those are good. The takes a small step backward in terms of snaps from 2023. Most of that is going to be in the games, but I would also expect him to have a few less snaps per game for the reasons you've said. He's getting older. We can't expect him to be on the field as much. So if he were to play 50% of the snaps in the games where he's healthy, I think he could, at the outside, still end up with about 550 snaps, down from, what was it, 692 or something this last year. So anyway, it'd be still a fairly substantial decrease in snaps. Still shows up as a dominant short yardage playmaker. And that can take many forms because a lot of teams don't run the ball against the Ravens on fourth down. Pierce can still be involved in that play and prove that this season. I want to see him still there. When I looked at it, I said, that is a pretty lofty set of goals for a guy who certainly has only had a good season, a 60th percentile season, one time in the last 4 years. But we've, of course, reset the bar what he did this last year.
Yeah, NFL's not for long, man. Like, what did you do last season? What are you going to do this season? You know, absolutely. So I agree with it wholeheartedly.
What does a great season look like to you?
All right, so I'm going to add a weird, obscure theme park reference here. You ready? Or analogy. All right, so great players, it's like the roller coasters that are indoor, air conditioned. It's dark. You have no idea what's around the corner. Your, you know, loops, turns, and it's your adrenaline's going the entire time. That's the great player in a roller coaster analogy, right? Good players, you know, you're like building anticipation as you go up to the top of the roller coaster, and you pause and you feel the adrenaline coming before the roller coaster releases. You go down, you have that adrenaline spike, and then, you know, there's some smoothness, and then there's a turn and you're upside down or whatever, right? So you have those peaks and those valleys, and that's a good NFL player, right? Pierce has somewhat been of the drop zone, right? You go up, and you're waiting, and then it drops, and it's just pure adrenaline for that game. You're like, holy shit, where this dude is insane, right? So let's get on the drop zone a few more times, right?
I was wondering if we want to get to the finish line on this analogy here, but thank you.
There we go. Yeah, so let's get on that ride a few more times, right? So we're talking about the Arizona game. There's a couple other games that pop. Let's bring that from three games where this dude's just taking over the game to five or six games.
Okay.
That's part of a great season for me. Doesn't miss a single game. Great season. My book, that's a great season. And then for me, all about hurries. Like, if we can get to go up from 27 hurries last year to 35. Great. Great. Okay. I'll take it all day.
Greedy as hell, but that's good for a great season. I'd say he plays 15 plus games and shows no sign of regression from his top flight 2023 season, which means he would beat the aging expectations significantly. And by the way, even if he plays 15 plus games, he still could play less snaps than he played last year, which is perfectly fine. I think he can still be a very dominant player playing 15, 17 as many snaps, et cetera, and still playing very well. He improves at a very small level his nose tackle run defense, which I thought was good, but it probably was not the very best he's been in his career. In particular, the missed tackles, I'd like them to be a little bit lower. The Ravens, obviously, I think put him in a tough position because they played so much too high to start with that they really dared the opposition to run the football and gave some good opportunities to develop holes that other teams took advantage of, like the Rams at the beginning of that game with their 9 straight runs and some other teams as well. But the problem is you can't keep doing that when the Ravens have a 2 or 3 touchdown lead, and the Ravens had a 2 or 3 touchdown lead for a hell of a lot of 2023. So hopefully we'll see more of that again. I think that, by the way, I think that trade-off worked out very well for the Ravens. I wouldn't ask them to change it. I just hope that Pierce can play a little better within that construct. Tackle productivity should be a little higher. Space denial needs to be at the same or better level, which is good. And his pocket compression, of course, is the main thing I want to see. As you mentioned, same level is fine on a rate basis for me. I don't need any improvement in that. I think that'd be a great season. Clearly, I think he probably had about a 90th percentile season this last year, and I'm only asking for an 80th, and he's a year older. So that's where I am. Jones and Matabike. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I did miss something here in both my good and great seasons. Show up in all of the Trenton Simpson and Roquan Smith highlights.
Like, there you go.
If Trenton Simpson is blowing somebody up in the backfield, it's probably going to be behind his hole that he's created, right? Yeah. So show up in their highlight reels.
All right. That works. The last thing I had to say on mine was that Jones and Matabike again have big seasons with Pierce, the hidden catalyst. And I know you mentioned that you want to see Pierce on third down. I think the torch has kind of already been passed during 23 to make Jones the pass rush pairing for Matabike. And I think they're going to stick with that in 23 based on how well it worked. It's not like Pierce isn't providing great pressure on early downs. He is. He probably gets a little bit less opportunity to create pressure there. It's true. But I still think that they want Jones to be the dominant nose tackle pass rusher on passing downs. And I think they've kind of made that change. It wasn't like Pierce wasn't doing it very well. He was. They just, as the season went on, he was playing a lot more of the third downs. Jones was. So I don't expect Pierce to be in there for that much of the third down. Although if anything happened to either player, to Matabike, I think they go to a 1-3 then with Jones at the 3 and yep. Pierce back at the 1 as a passing down, not to mention probably some rush nickel if that were to happen. Yep. But they have options, and this team is got a cornucopia of riches right now on the defensive line with having 3 guys who can rush the pass. So the Ravens basically have never had that in their entire history.
Which you already touched on it. Like, we were not thinking this was coming in 2024 yet. Or was it the defensive tackle that New England drafted? What year was that? I can't remember.
Barmore a couple of years ago.
He was the only defensive tackle in like the first 3 rounds that was worth anything. And I remember the same year you were talking, I was like, yep, if we don't get that dude, I don't know what we're going to do in the future. Like, yep. But did not see this cornucopia of pass rushers coming. Did not see that happening.
They got the whole band back together, and the whole band is playing better than they ever have. It's like the Beatles have done their whole Hamburg tour here, and they learned how to play. And they've done their 10,000 hours of whatever that they need to get good at something. But very impressive, obviously, season from those 3, and was a big part of that 60 sack year.
Yeah. I don't know how we didn't know that the Samford Bulldog and the Connecticut defensive and interior defensive linemen were going to be producing massively for us in 2024. I don't know how we missed that, Ken.
We have not seen the number of small school picks from DaCosta that were in the Newsom era. Now the transfer portal has reduced the possibility of doing it. The extra years people tend to spend in college. And now there's a lot of players who take an extra year in college. There was one guy who spent 7 years, a whole bunch of players had 6. this year. So I don't know what we're going to see in the future in terms of that. Some of the NIL money is at a factor there too, but there's a much more gravitational pull towards the bigger schools, which means it's kind of taken away one of the Ravens' big advantages in spell school scouting.
Yep. And I think it's, I just saw something and it was interesting. It was Charles Barkley, David Letterman on Netflix, my next guest. And Charles Barkley is talking about how NIL is impacting WNBA. And I thought about that and how that's going to translate to the NFL too, because there's probably between LSU, Alabama, Clemson, there's probably those guys that would be third, fourth round picks that are probably going to stay in college a little bit longer, which, you know, to your point, is just going to make the small school picks happen more and more.
Yeah, Rob Long is saying that he thinks it affects college recruiting now, is that you don't have the same stability in terms of your college recruiting because you don't offer players NIL money if you want to replace them effectively, but effectively you're having to tell these high school seniors, we think we have a place for you, instead of we definitely have a place for you, because you've got a third year player, you don't know he's going to go pro or not, and there's a real reason for him to stay around, or even a fourth year player wanted to get that fifth year of eligibility.
Yeah. And also scholarships. Like, do you even need a scholarship if you get if somebody can offer you $5 million in NIL money, do you even need a scholarship at that point?
I don't know what freshman is getting that money.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tap, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But that would be really great. And I'm sure it's coming, by the way, because college athletics are huge. So, you know, we're going to see the same expansion in salaries here in NIL money that we saw in baseball in the 80s or football in the 90s and 2000s.
If NIL was around when that Lamar Jackson Vine video of him in high school and he like stopped at the, you know, half yard line and watched the defender sprint in front of him, miss a tackle, like if NIL was a thing then, I'm sure Lamar would have gotten a couple million. I'm sure.
All right, let's move it on. You told me I'd have to.
Sorry. Yeah,
this happens. But Patrick McCary, we'll talk about him. 27 on 8/13 in his sixth season, unrestricted free agent after 2024. In fact, there is a school of thought where his place on the roster in 2024 is not even certain, since it's about a $4.4 million cap gain from cutting him.
Do you want to talk about his future value? I want to talk about it, man. I want to dive right into that. So Pat McCary hypothetically doesn't have any future value right now, right? But if we cut him, somebody else signs him, we're not even getting a comp pick, right? So we're gonna have Robert or Sala as the last offensive lineman on the roster, or the kid we get from Arizona, Houston Jones. Like, that's gonna be our last offensive lineman, and you know, then there's really not much developmental in the future. I mean, maybe Sala does, maybe Samak does, but like, it's not. There's not a lot there, but I think the case could be made that Patrick McCary can get us a fifth round comp pick as a right tackle for somebody that doesn't have a right tackle at all, you know, or that needs a swing tackle. Like, is that contract we signed him to, if somebody else signs him to a 3-4 year deal worth, sure, you know, it, can that get us a comp pick? So there's some future value for Pat McCary in being on this roster for 2024, just not in the conventional sense.
That's a great point. It really is a great point. And if you scale up his contract from the last time, just scale up for the, you know, increase in the cap or the increase in salaries at tackle, if you want to be more specific about it, I think you would find that it'd be right between a 5 and a 6 in terms of where he might have value. And it wouldn't surprise me if some team is willing to sign him for 3 years instead of 2. We do see a lot of 2-year deals going to offensive linemen, but if he got a deal similar to what Zeitler got when he joined the Ravens, that wouldn't shock me.
Right. And then also, it's not the Lions now, but who is it? It's not the Jaguars anymore. But I mean, I guess it still is the Jaguars. They signed Christian Kirk to that insane deal, but teams overpay, man. Like, it happens every year. There's 2 or 3 guys in free agency that you're like, what are you doing to the market with this one player at this one position? Why are you doing that? And like, you know, Pat McCary's not going to break the bank by any stretch of the imagination, but in terms of a swing tackle or like a bottom tier right tackle, could someone overpay him? And that leads us to a 4th round pick, a comp pick. I could see it potentially, right?
That's probably too high. That's probably higher than I would say. I don't think he's going to, like, Patrick Queen got 3 years, $41 million. He's a 4th round. Yeah, pick. True.
So yeah, 5th round pick, maybe if we're lucky.
So, yeah. You know, let's just focus on his value here for right now and say he's a critical 6th man. They've talked about his versatility being extremely valuable. I don't think his versatility is really the play anymore. I think that what the value he has is as a backup tackle. And he's played both backup tackle positions at a level that's significantly higher than the replacement level. In fact, I'd say he's basically done it at a league average level in 2023.
And I'll take that. I'll take that any day. And it's for $4 million. Like, I just cannot imagine that Eric DaCosta walked away from the season with Alejandro Villanueva being the only body that he could throw out at left tackle and say, yeah, we don't need a plan D anymore, you know, or plan C. Like, I just can't, I can't imagine that happens. So this idea of him getting cut over $4 million, and I'm just like, I'm looking at who's available and I'm like, I just can't see it. But when we get to a great season, I got something in the noggin that maybe there's something there as well.
Okay. We've a little bit of stuff to discuss before we get there, because they do have other options to tackle this year. They bought in Josh Jones, who was a guy that they may end up playing at guard. He's got this much experience at guard. He's got more experience at tackle. If he's going to really be a find, he's got to play tackle. If he can help the Ravens at guard in 2024, fine. That would be good. But whatever they can get out of Josh Jones, frankly, is a bonus. I don't think he should be starting anywhere. Basically, I don't think he should start over Voorhees. I don't think he should start over Cleveland. And apparently, in the mandatory minicamp, they'd been going to Fa'alele at right guard. And I think they're just kind of putzing around with things right now. And last year, they started with Sala there, and Sala actually entered training camp as the first team left guard. I don't expect to see that happen again. I expect we'll see Voorhees and Cleveland as the left guard, right guard combo when training camp begins, which hopefully means McCary is not needed anywhere on the interior. If he were to be needed on the interior, would it be reasonable to assume that might occur at center, where Nick Samak is the guy who they have as the backup at this point?
for sure. Yeah, I think Nick was the sixth round pick, comp sixth round pick, so end of the sixth round too. So like, I can't imagine that they're going to go to him as the first option to come in. And look, I have just as awful nightmares as anybody else about that ball in Buffalo that went over Lamar's head. Like, I have those same nightmares. I do, but I think Pat McCary can get you through a game. Two games. Like, he can get you, he can be a bridge at center, right? He's not going to finish your season and we're going to win a Super Bowl with Pat McCary at center, but he can be a bridge in the interim to get you to a point of what you need, right?
I think that would be great for him. And by the way, those plays happen to everyone. It's kind of interesting. If you look at PFF for Tyler Linderbaum, I believe they had him for zero sacks this last year. But if you're a fan of football that remembers the games individually, you remember Tyler Linder snapping the ball past Jackson into the end zone. The Jackson had to kick the ball out of the end zone.
He had to kick it out, yeah.
Yeah, and that, if that's not a sack, I don't know what is. Now, I can understand that he maybe does not deserve 100% of the blame for that, but he certainly deserves a lot of it, whether it's a half or two-thirds. I can't remember what I actually charged him for out of the total, but I did give some of it to Lamar. Just tells you, don't look at necessarily the integer sack totals as being what they are. Anyway, it happens to all linemen.
But also on the guard point, I feel the same way about him at guard. Like, especially with Harbaugh's philosophy, which I think has been a benefit to the Ravens during the Harbaugh era of, you know, offensive line continuity, liking a one-for-one replacement. I think that's been benefit. It's been logical. It makes sense. And I can't point to a single example where that's like, dude, that's a bad call. Why are we doing that? That makes no sense. So, although I wouldn't want him, you know, being a guard, I also wouldn't want him being a center long term and planning on that. If he has to come in for the rest of a game, or he's got to, you know, start for two or three games while a guy's got a high ankle sprain or something that, you know, he just needs the rest, then I don't have a problem with that per se.
Yeah. No, I'm okay with it too. I think the Ravens honestly have a very good pairing him out for multiple reasons. I go through this real quickly at guard. I think big men and big strong men at guard are the order of the day with Linderbaum at center. I think you want guys that can maintain the back end of a double team, that can get to level two and crunch somebody. Linderbaum can do that too, by the way. He's perfectly fine at crunching somebody. The problem that Linderbaum has been a little short on, probably as a run blocker, if you had any criticism as a run blocker, is he doesn't maintain his blocks at these double teams at the first level long enough to get that player off balance for the trailing player. But he's been very good, obviously, moving up to level two. No complaints about that at all. And big improvement in his pass blocking was just that's what's going to make him an actual football player. So good news there. I hope they'll do that. The big second reason is that the Ravens have had terrific luck making big unathletic men into good pulling guards. And, you know, they need to continue that strategy with players like Voorhees in Cleveland, if it can work at all. It worked for Bozeman. It worked for James Hurst. You know, it can work for a lot of players if it can work for them. And I think Dallas Sanders has proven to be kind of a great mentor in terms of dealing with the footwork needed to pull. It didn't have any of the same problems that I'm seeing in a lot of the 2005 tape we're reviewing now. Of you know, continual footwork issues between the center and the guards causing problems. So that's been one of the really nice things.
Yeah, footwork, anyway, angles, and then scheme as well. You know, it seems like Coach D really is, you know, on these guys and in their ear constantly about what to be looking for and how to play smart football. Like, even if you're not the most athletic or you're not the strongest and you can't move as quick, it seems to be like they have the right plan of attack.
Right. If you watch the offensive line drills run, and unfortunately seem to have moved these into the middle of the field where I have a harder time getting a look at them when I'm there at camp, but I tell you, it's a lot of fun to watch. When they line up, they do half line drills, generally speaking, where they have two offensive linemen standing up with pads to represent the defensive line on that side, and they run the drills. And I swear, Dallas Sanders is like a Hollywood director. He's got great, let's do it again. That was great, let's do it again, kind of thing. It's like, right. What? Isn't that a wrap on this scene already? You know, you're thinking, but he's very, very technical and really gets in the spot of an individual lineman and shows them what they're doing wrong with their feet in terms of their initial move. You know, I remember one time, this is a little off target, but Ronnie Stanley, no, was it Ronnie? I think it was Orlando Brown, was at right tackle. And he had one rep that Dallas Sanders wasn't happy with it. And he goes, "What did I do wrong?" And he goes, You're slapping at him. I just heard that. And it was like, I'm hearing Burgess Meredith as the Penguin again talking.
I love it.
It was a lot of fun. He is a world-class offensive line coach, and I hope he can stay around for another decade with the Ravens, even though he's probably about 70 right now.
Yeah, you'd think. Yeah. The other big note I have about Pat McCary and being on the squad, being in the meeting room, being on the field, he raises the bar for those backup spots, and not just in play, but you know, what's going into these players' heads and how secure they are and how hard they have to work. And I think like that competition breeds greatness, right? Iron sharpens iron. So the more you have a higher bar for the backups and like, oh, this dude's a backup. This is what it takes to be a backup for this team. Like, that's a good thing for the roster. That's a good thing for us.
That's a fantastic point. That is really a fantastic point. Is you really want that bar to be very high? You want the expectations for your backups to be high. And I think the Ravens had some guys who didn't work out in the last couple of years, where it's proved that it is a very tough bar. Tyree Phillips got cut very unexpectedly in this situation. Saleh never saw the field after being anointed the starting left guard in a bit of trickery that we've talked about so many times on the show. I'm not going to repeat it, but it is nice to have your backups really understand that you're not guaranteed a spot on this team. Nobody has a scholarship here. Nobody has a guaranteed contract right now. So
Ben Bredesen, Nico Siragusa, like the list is there, you know? I think that aspect of it is worth the money. And again, just looking at free agency, what's left out there and what we could possibly do. I just can't see him moving on from, I can't see it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I would agree with you. I was kind of setting up this next point, which is if you look at PFF, and I'm not trying to bash PFF, they do a great job in terms of their ratings on individual pass and run blocking. They do a great job in general on the rating service. And you see how many times I refer to their material and have guests on the show from their R&D area in particular. But one of the things that really bothers me is how well Stanley was graded relative to McCary this last year, because I think McCary clearly outplayed him. And I wanted to go quickly through that in my system here and tell you where the differences are. But he played OT basically at the league average of a 0.70. If that's a raw score prior to adjustment, that would be right in the middle of the C range after adjustment. Most teams would kill they'd have people killed to have a backup tackle on their roster.
Absolutely. Play that level. Yeah. Or they'd break out video cameras and record other teams' practices to figure out how to do it, or deflate footballs to figure out how to do it. I don't know.
There you go. Not uncommon who you might not. I can guess who you're talking about. Anyway, he had 559 scored snaps at tackle in 2023, and he lost 30 points off a perfect one score. And I want to talk about that. This is in his raw score, not in the adjusted score. So Stanley lost 37 points, and I want to show you where the difference is between the two. So he had 46 missed blocks. That was minus 0.08, 46 out of 559. That's how many points he lost on that. Stanley lost 0.11 in that same place. So three more points were lost by Stanley there. They basically were the same in penetrations, which is almost no adjustment. They were very similar in pressures, but Stanley was worse with 0.11 or 0.12. He had 0.09 or 0.10, 16 and a third pressures in a relatively small number of snaps, was where McCary did not look good. There's another category coming up too. His quarterback hits were minus 0.02. That's, I think, the same number as Stanley. And his sacks, 6.34 sacks, so 6 1/3 sacks in 559 snaps, was minus 0.08. The big difference was in penalties, where McCary only had one offensive holding and one false start. Stanley was penalized 10 times, and that was a bunch of points of difference. It was, I think, 0.07 for Stanley and minus 0.02 for McCary. So this is something that comes up occasionally with PFF, is they have a significant underweight in their system for penalties, where they don't credit them as severely. I think they are very significant severity events, because the problem created is all on that one player, as opposed to you have a 10-yard gain. There's about seven people who have their hand out for credit on that play. You have, you know, probably three offensive linemen. You have your fullback, you have your quarterback. You might have a receiver throwing a block, and you certainly have the running back who maybe breaking a tackle or making a good cut to get to that 10-yard run. It's hard for me to figure out how you give the charge for that penalty to anybody but the flagged player.
Well, also, like, do they have a metric for, I guess you can't really have a metric because it's arbitrary, but like, hypothetically, false start on the left tackle against TJ Watt is a little bit more understandable than a false start when they're lined up against me. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
it still affects the game the same, but like, it's somewhat understandable. And I got to that thought by thinking of Ronnie's health, and I'm like, is that part of why he's being penalized? Because he's just not, like, the dude's just not ready to be out there. He's not healthy, you know?
Okay, a lot to unpack there real quickly. Yeah, I agree with you. It's probably a lot of it is Ronnie's health, and he's having to cheat more given what he knows is the condition of that ankle and how he needs to plant on it and whatnot. Hopefully, you know, based on the way he played in the last four games of the year, hopefully we're past that. Hopefully he takes a big step forward. I don't know. I don't think the Ronnie Stanley one has come out yet. I did record it already with Childs Walker. It'll be out next week. We talk to some length about this. So when I say to you, it'll be out next week, go back in last week and look for it.
There you go.
And you'll find it. So I think that's certainly a possibility with Ronnie. The other thing is, both these are raw scores, so they're not considering the opponent. I consider opponent in the adjustment. PFF does not consider the opponent at all, but the new work that's being done by the R&D head, Timo Riska, is looking at quality of the opponent as one of his N factors in looking at expectation for pass blockers. So that's really good. And I hope that PFF will get that into their standard going forward.
Especially for the trenches. I think we talked about it on the Sam Adams episode, where it's like Sam Adams would have been benefited from PFF when you just realized that guards are having a bad day against this dude. Yeah.
I'm sure he would have done very well.
Yeah.
McCary had tremendous week-to-week variation in his play this last year, had some really bad performances versus the divisional great pass rushers. Highsmith, Hendrickson, and Garrett each had great games against him, so that was unfortunate. And if you just look at his week-by-week grades, I'm going to read them off real quick here. So these are only scored games. So you had to have at least 20 scored snaps in these games to get a grade. But Cincinnati in week 2, he got an A, a B versus Indianapolis, an F versus Cleveland, one of the Garrett games, a B minus versus Pittsburgh, an A plus, one of the only ones scored by any Ravens offensive lineman this year against Seattle. Then an F the next week against Cleveland again, a D plus against Cincinnati in the second Hendrickson game, an A against Jacksonville, only in 22 snaps, but still an A. And Miami, an F, despite the fact the team was playing great in that game, ended up scoring 56 points. He had a tough day of pressure in that one in a rotational role.
Yep.
All right. Let me go back to it here. And I guess we talked about most everything. Let's get to a good and a great season for Patrick McCary.
Yeah. So for me, a good season he's the first backup to all five positions. Realistically, he's probably going to start four games at some position or multiple, like start four games between a couple positions. I figured in aggregate, he's probably got the snaps for seven games. That's a good season. And he plays well enough in those snaps to get us a fifth round comp pick.
Okay.
I also have eliminate the just complete Fs, where it's regardless of your competition, even with that adjustment, you're still just it's a bad outing, a complete F. So if we can do those two things, that's a good season for me. I'll take a D plus against TJ Watt. I'll take that. I'm okay with that. But the complete fall off the table games, just eliminate those. Get us a fifth round comp pick.
Now, there's one of the guys who listens to this show a lot to use a fall off the table reference. I appreciate that. A good season. Ready as a backup tackle or center for the inevitable injuries. Sees less than 150 to 250 snaps. And approximately, 150 to 250 snaps, and delivers slightly lower than a league average level. That'd actually be a step back from his last season, where he played a whole hell of a lot of snaps and played at a league average level. I want him to play a little bit less. And I think it'd be an interesting question. What is for the Baltimore Ravens, what is the optimal number of snaps that Patrick McCary plays in 2024? Because if it's zero, there's a good chance it's because he gets hurt during the preseason. So I don't think it's zero. But then how many is it? What's the optimal number? I think it's actually a very difficult problem to solve, maybe.
I honestly don't. I think just listening to Harbaugh all these years, and I honestly don't know why I listen at this point, because I realized last offseason as I'm listening to training camp and I listen to your podcast, and it's like every article and every presser writes itself, oh, this player's come a long way and they're really improving. And, it's the same thing every time. But I honestly think that Harbaugh and his core would say, zero snaps, because that means all of the starters are healthy all of the snaps.
Except it might not mean that, because it might mean McCary's hurt. But yes, I agree with you. All right. So that's all I had for a good season. So what's a great season for you?
I also had So there's another good season potential for him.
Okay.
He does the same things, starts 4 to 5 games as a starter, filling in for some position, gets 5 to 7 games in aggregate based off of snaps. Ravens are happy with that and extend him for 3 to 4 years at $13 to $16 million, somewhere in there. We're happy. You like being in this role. Let's keep things going. So that also could constitute a good season for me.
I did not get into the contract at all, and I like that addition. I think that's a really good one.
For a great season, starts at right tackle, plays well enough that before the trade deadline, he is traded, as well as a day 3 pick for a player that they value, or, moving McCary into day 3 pick to a day 2 pick. And that paves the way for Rosengarten to start. That's a great season. He starts the season, wins the job at a camp because he's doing well, and Rosengarten still has some things to learn. And, he's a rookie, and that's understandable, but he shows enough that at the trade deadline, you trade Pat McCary and something to get something else of value, opening the way for Rosengarten.
That it would be very like Orlando Brown, and they didn't actually get rid of James Hurst at exactly that moment, but they did at the end of the season. Yep. And they kept, in the rookies got to earn it way that John Harbaugh likes to play. He kept Orlando Brown on the sidelines for a little while he was supposedly working on some stuff. And then he came in, he was so much better than Hurst, that you wonder, what game are you playing there, John?
We saw EDC do it. Like, who knew that the Rams were ready to move on from Marcus Peters and we're going to swing Jalen Ramsey? And like, it worked out. It worked out for the Rams, and it worked. I don't know that it really worked out for Kenny Young, but he got a fresh set of eyes on him to make a new impression. So it worked out for mostly everybody. A great season for me. Without, it makes sense, and I think it's possible.
That was one of the great off-season things, was DaCosta talking about Kenny Young dropping the ice cream cone on his carpet when he's being caught.
Not to take away from Ozzie, but I absolutely love the fact that EDC is more in front of us as fans and is willing to peel the curtain back you know, again, not to deject, because in Ozzie we trust. I'll carry that to my grave for sure. But yeah, I do love that EDC is willing to tell us things like that, because God bless it. I love it.
I mean, it's certainly been wonderful continuity. I like offensive line continuity. The GM continuity for the Baltimore Ravens has been amazing, because it's all the same system that's been used all the way. In fact, there are people who would tell you that Ozzie Newsome is really a Belichick disciple. And that was all really put in place with the Browns. And Ozzie Newsome, he wasn't even the GM right away. He was director of pro personnel or whatever he was while probably Modell was underpaying.
Didn't know that. That's interesting.
So you know, whatever you want to talk about in terms of this, the Ravens, it has absolutely been the same guys making the picks the entire time, because philosophically, they're very similar. Now, you have to really fight to find these minor differences between Newsome and DaCosta. And you know what? DaCosta still wants Newsome right there at his right hand on draft.
Of course. Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. How could you not? How could you not? You know, and even if there is like some ego involved about it, like at the end of the day, like whoever is in that position is making the pick. So then like, okay, ego's out of the way, you know, let's still, you know, work together, be friends, enjoy this.
Right.
Yep. No,
it's certainly great to see those guys working together. And Ozzie Newsome just, he is an unbelievable human being to be able to work through this on that level. I mean, obviously he has the respect of, he's in literally every Hall of Fame you can possibly be in.
Yeah.
And he certainly has the respect of every Ravens fan out there. So he's earned it. Certainly. Let me get back to McCary here. A great season, takes a step forward and is available. If options at any of the five offensive line spots break down due to injury or ineffectiveness, I guess it's more likely to be injury at left tackle. It's more likely to be ineffectiveness probably at any of the other four or any of the other three. Plays 350 plus snaps at or above the league average, wherever that is. And he's lauded as one of the unsung heroes that saves the Ravens' playoff push. So that's really a key factor here, is if McCary can plug a hole in the boat as you're trying to get this three changes on the offensive line forced through in a big talent year for the Baltimore Ravens, that's going to be a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's so doable too. That is so doable. I can see it happening for sure. You know, first round of the playoffs, if we don't get a bye, you know, somebody goes down and then, you know, he's still going to be Pat McCary. Like, it's going to happen. You know, he's going to get beat. But as long as he doesn't get beat bad enough, like, and we can still make plays and win, then yeah, he's the unsung hero of the playoffs. I could definitely see that happening.
Sean, always great talking football with you. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Oh man, I always forget about this because I try to avoid Twitter. I'm on Twitter, X. I'm on X. It is at @BMORE_SKY_HIGH. I made it when I used to be a pothead, so I just leave it there. Too lazy to figure out how to change it. So be more sky high. I'm on there. I'm on X.
Appreciate it, Sean. Always great talking football with you. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. Topics are open. July is a great time to record. In particular, if you're looking ahead, look for the concerns series. If you have a concern about the Baltimore Ravens coming up, please hit me up with a DM on what you'd like to talk about. I'll make sure I get you scheduled on a show. If you'd like to do recollections, still, that's still open. If you're a fan and you're still listening at this point, after Sean and I have been talking here for a full hour, please go out and write us a 5-star review out there on any of your podcast platforms. They are much appreciated and they help drive traffic to the show. Sean, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, buddy. I always love talking football with you, brother.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.